Good morning. It is Friday, December 11th, 2015. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to a BrianMadden.com podcast. I think this may be the first time in the history of our podcast that we have the whole band together. So I am joined today by all four of my coworkers on the Brian Madden team here at TechTarget. At our studio, we have Jack Madden. Hello.
Good morning.
We have Justin Meisinger.
Hello, Justin. How's it going?
Mariah Lyons is here.
Hello.
And joining via Skype is Gabe Knuth.
Hey, you're on Skype too, aren't you?
I'm on Skype as well.
All right. and Justin sounds funny because Justin, I think, is on a real microphone today, isn't he?
I am, and it's completely set up for Brian Madden. So if I sound like Brian, that's cool.
But that's why it sounds so boomy.
Ah.
So really, Brian's voice is just normal like the rest of ours.
It's like a Mike
just
Tyson
a microphone.
Voice. Yeah. And it's also Justin's going to sound really quiet because he's not able to talk as loudly as I talk.
I just have to project like Brian Madden does.
Listen to the sound of my voice.
Not bad. I mean, he has been listening to you talk for 4 years now.
You are hearing me talk.
So as we said in the podcast intro, which I'll talk about, it's going to sound really quiet. The page in a second. So today is Justin's last day at TechTarget, and we'll get to that. I haven't processed this yet fully myself. And you know, I think many of you know Justin, who've been around. He is our, what job do you say?
I tell people multimedia producer because it's all encompassing.
Multimedia producer. So we have multiple medias
does that mean you use like CD-ROMs?
You know, when I started here, we were still using CD-ROMs.
Hey, those were DVDs.
And tapes.
Final Cut came on CDs, I think.
We used tapes.
we did use tapes. All right, fine. Yeah. Multimedia works.
And so, I mean, Justin, you know, if you come to Brian Forum, you know, at Brian Forum, Justin is doing the camera, like running around recording all the videos of all the booth interviews with the vendors. He's also organizing all of the people who record all the Brian Forum breakout sessions. And then he manages all that, uploads that, does all the video stuff. He also runs our podcasts, and he shoots all the videos that we do when we kind of do sit-down interviews in our studio. He does the podcast. We do live from VMworld and Synergy and stuff. There's all these we call them like the funny videos. It's fun. Like we use those words. I don't know if anyone else uses those words.
We hope they do.
And we'll put in the show notes, we'll put links to a bunch of these videos. You know, we do a lot of these sort of short 60-second to 2-minute, 3-minute videos, and that are just, you know, we did like those 30 videos for BlackBerry back in the day, and we've done a bunch for Citrix and VMware, and we've got a list here: Dell, Infinio, Intel, Semantics, and Plivity. We've done a lot of these videos over the years, and those are shot more like little kind of short films. So we shoot those single camera, lots of takes, lots of cuts, edit those together, and Justin does all that stuff too. And now we're losing you.
Yeah, well, you know, time to go.
part of what we're wanting to do today is just make sure that we're able to do podcasts without Justin. So Justin is sitting inside the studio in my chair right now, and Mariah is operating the equipment.
Beautifully, I might add.
Yeah.
She's doing a great job.
Oh, your expert instructions are enabling that. We assume, actually. Can people hear us? I don't.
Yeah, I checked.
We're gonna go with yes.
I checked. People can hear us.
They can always listen to it after the fact. It's fine.
I was so tempted when Mariah counts us down. This is the first time Mariah is counting us in now. I was so tempted to
just not say anything.
Not say anything. And then a second time, I was so tempted to, like, just keep on. Yeah.
We're not going to haze the new guy. She'll never want to do it ever again. So,
But it's interesting because the podcast setup we have is actually kind of complex. When we have people, you know, in the studio and on Skype, we've got music and they can talk to each other. But anyway, seems to be rolling. So So anyway, let's today we'll focus on Justin. And you know, Justin, you know that when we do these podcast shows and we have guests, we always talk about kind of how they got into IT and how they got into, you know, technology and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of want to ask the same stuff of you too.
Sure.
You joined us. Was it September of 2009?
It was August of 2010.
Okay, so in no way was I correct.
That's okay.
That also explains why I couldn't find the in the show notes. I wanted to post, like, I think we did an article when you joined us, like, welcoming you aboard, and I wanted to find that, but I couldn't just search for it because you can't just search for like Justin BrianMadden.com because you know you're
good luck with that. Yeah.
So
I remember being the one that calls you. I was out to lunch, and Brian's like, "All right, we got to hire this guy," and I called you. And I was the one that got to offer you the job. So that was cool. But I remember going through, there were lots of candidates that we went through that were way overqualified.
and I was just right.
Scotty, I guess I should say. Like they clearly were the next Scorsese in their mind. And we were like, no, man, we need somebody who's kind of like nerdy like us. And so your resume had on there like that you like to build your own computers and stuff. And we're like, oh yeah, this is our guy. At least that's my incomplete recollection of the entire process. I'm sure it was much longer than that and painful. But
I had four interviews. I don't think they were all with you guys. I think part of it was with editorial. But I went
didn't
through four.
You, were you living in Boston at the time?
I was. Yeah.
So you went into the office. That's right. And then so I remember that now. So the guys at TechTarget interviewed you, and then they sort of like signed off on you and said, yeah, we think you can do it. And then we also went through and looked at your resume. And
well, let's back up because you're so far the first and only person I've hired, and it makes me not want to hire someone ever again.
Thank you.
In terms of the corporate process, you know.
Yeah.
But let's back up. So you're a computer nerd. What's your you grew up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Went to school.
Yeah. Well, so that all started with my dad. So my dad used to work for what was Bell Atlantic and 9X, and they became Verizon eventually. And they used to throw their computers away every year. they would literally throw them away and get new ones.
That's why you can't have rollover minutes.
Yeah. And so so when they would do that, he'd bring one home. Like, we would drive into Manhattan, and we would go to the trash, like, behind the building. But by trash, I mean it was like this like nice room at the base of the, you know, skyscraper it was in. And we would take a computer home. And I don't think you were supposed to do that, but, you know, it didn't matter. And we get it home. And so that started out with like a 286 IBM, like PCAT or whatever. And it had like Monopoly and like Oregon Trail and Reader Rabbit or something like that.
These are the Verizon corporate apps.
Right, sure.
Right. Mavis Beacon teaches typing.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Monopoly
so,
was actually a Verizon corporate app for, you know, taking over their sales awareness.
Yeah. It all makes sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, Monopoly, yeah.
That's one of the best jokes ever.
Monopoly, yeah.
It's a little too perfect.
Monopoly was boring. It was just...
So,
the board game at all.
So we got that computer, and that was all running on DOS and everything. And the problem was that I guess these weren't terribly reliable, or they were just left on all the time. But they would break usually in the first year, which was fine because we were getting another one. You know,
again, Verizon. Like, this is so Verizon. This
yeah,
just throw in the pile, guys.
Yeah. And so the first one, I remember the monitor burned out. We were playing Monopoly, and it got really dark and started smoking out the monitor. And so we were like, oh, okay. But, so we would just do that every year. So eventually got to the point where he was bringing stuff home that was, like, Pentium level, you know, when that started to kind of, like, roll around. And
they were still throwing out computers yearly at the Pentium years?
Oh, yeah. My first computer from them that had a Pentium was, like, a Pentium 90. I mean, it was a good computer. Wow. And... I wanted to start upgrading them though, because they didn't come with CD-ROM drives. And by this point, you know, the stuff was popular, but they didn't come with them because they were business PCs and they just needed a disk drive. So we wanted to like always update things or like add RAM to it because they just buy base models. And so I think at the time I would always make my parents take me to CompUSA and Computer City. Those were things.
Circuit City?
I don't
know, Computer City. Yeah,
I think it was something in New Jersey. We had something called Computer City, which was awesome. It was kind of like Fry's. And it went out of business like years ago. But I just like buy RAM and buy like CD-ROM drives and stuff and start upgrading them. And my parents would always want us to pay the people to do it. And, you know, they'd charge like 50, 60 bucks just to install something for you. So I was like, no, I'll just do it myself. And I ended up breaking a lot of computers that way because, you know, static discharge or putting things in backwards would do things it shouldn't do. And, you know,
it's all right. You learn the hard way.
Yeah, you learn the hard way.
You didn't have the internet to show you how to do things either.
That's the thing. Yeah, you're just kind of guessing, right? So
I remember pleading with my mother at a Circuit City one time to buy a serial mouse. Like, Mom, we need this mouse. And I had to make my case that we needed a mouse.
Wait, I did too, about how it's going to help me do my homework better.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. Homework was, yeah.
But it was on DOS, and so, like, no apps did it. It came with some app that moved the cursor around, and, like, I couldn't use it with ProWrite, the ASCII-based DOS text editor.
Yeah.
But, like, yo, so you bring her in there, like, to show her DOS shell and, like, how the cursor moves around. And see why I needed this, and then whatever. I had the mouse by then; I didn't care.
I also used the same thing to justify a 24-pin printer versus a 9-pin printer.
Ooh, stepping up.
So, but it sounds like your mom wanted you to spend money, and you were like, "No, Mom, I can save you money."
Sort of. It was, I mean, for me, like I always spent my own money, with the exception of like once or twice for Christmas, they'd like ask me what I wanted, and I was like, "I want a CD-ROM drive," you know, but. I ended up breaking a lot of computers that way, and also Windows 3.1, I used to just massacre that thing because I got it in my head at some point that if you couldn't open a file by double-clicking on it, it wasn't a good file, like it was garbage. So I went through the Windows like system directory or whatever it was in 3.1 and started double-clicking like DLLs, and they wouldn't open.
Delete
so,
it.
So I was just like, "Yeah, this is garbage." Delete.
You throw out files like you throw out computers.
Yeah, basically. So you know, and then eventually, like Windows just says, "Hey, I'm not working anymore."
Windows is like, "Yeah, this needs to stop."
Yeah. Well, so my dad would like have to fix it, and I guess all he really did was probably reinstall Windows. I don't know. But you know, eventually you learn to not do things like that, and it gets better. So yeah, I don't know. And at some point, I think it was right before college, I finally was like, I'm going to build my own computer because I didn't like what stuff cost, you know, to buy it from. I think I was looking at Compaq at the time. And like, I was like, I'll just build my own. And it worked. So I've always, every computer I've actually ever owned since then, with the exception of my laptops, I built myself. And I'm through like several of those now. And it always seems to go better because you save money and you get a lot more power out of it and you just configure it the way you want to. But I've actually realized, like, we're getting older, you know, I don't know that I'd want to do that anymore, or I wouldn't want to go through the hassle anymore. Is that what happens?
Of building a computer?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind doing it, but it's sort of like, I could just go to the store right now and buy something really awesome for really cheap and not have to deal with
it. Yeah, it's because I
agree 100%. I just did it recently. Yeah. So back in like 2002 or whatever, 2003, I built a MAME cabinet, a multiple arcade machine emulator cabinet that'll play a bunch of you know, our old arcade games. And I hadn't updated that PC since then. So it was a 2003 era computer sitting in there, and I had to, it finally just died, and I was tired of buying the same board on eBay just to keep this thing going.
Right.
And so I just replaced the hardware that was in there thinking, whatever, this is easy now. And it's not, man. Like it's almost not worth it. Like I thought, all right, I'm going to install Windows super fast by putting the, making a bootable USB stick on a USB 3 stick and plugging it into the USB 3 port. But Windows doesn't have USB 3 drivers. Windows 7 doesn't have USB 3 drivers built into it. And so it doesn't see the USB stick, like after the initial, like Windows is starting thing, it just doesn't find the install files. And I'm like, how are we still doing this? And at that point, I think I'm resigned to just never building my own computer again. I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
That's weird because Windows 95 didn't have USB drivers. You need to get Windows 95B, and I didn't even know that was still a thing.
I'm even kind of over, like, Raspberry Pi. I tried to set up a Raspberry Pi thin client just this morning, and I plugged in the Wi-Fi that came with this, like, whole kit for it, and it detected my wireless network, connected to it, but it didn't add a default route. So, like, I could talk all I wanted to on my local network, but I couldn't get outside. And so I literally had to, like, Google how to add a default route in Debian and then add a default route myself. Like, why is this a thing?
The old college effort of trying to convert a Raspberry Pi into a thin client. So now you have, you know, justified the expense, and now that Raspberry Pi is running your 3D printer.
Oh, no, 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 that's a different Raspberry Pi. There's a bunch of them now. But that one just worked. So, and this one did not.
You know, the thing is, we've talked about this before, because I was in a conversation, might have been with you, Gabe, where we were talking about how technology has changed. You know, you can't build your own computer anymore. But that actually is not really true, because, you know, even back in the day, you know, we weren't, like, assembling microprocessors. You just bought them and plug them in. And so the difference now is that we're just older.
Yeah, so I would argue it's easier now. You don't have to know what IRQs are and set jumpers for COM ports, things like that.
Well, once you turn 30, you know, you spend the extra $100 for Michael Dell to have built it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, maybe you're into that sort of thing. And every once in a while, I don't mind going through the exercise for nostalgia's reasons. But, you know, I'm not.
It's like changing your oil for nostalgia.
Justin, I don't know. Like, I used to build computers for people, like, in the neighborhood and for family members and stuff. Like, I don't know if you ever got into that, but, like, I realized very early on that when you do that, you are the person they call for support.
Right, which is actually why I don't do it. Because I have a lot of, you know, relatives who do their computer stuff, and I always just told them to buy a Dell because I didn't want to have to. I'm still their freaking tech support. Like, I'm going to be in New Jersey next week for, like, Christmas. And my aunt already has a list of things that I have to fix. Like, her wireless printer doesn't connect to her iPad. And
that's funny because Justin, you're getting married next year. This hasn't happened yet. It'll happen too. We're going to become her family's tech support.
Oh, that already has happened. That's the thing. Actually, just last night we sat down to dinner. We were watching, Man in the High Castle, which everyone should watch. It's pretty cool. But her aunt calls and she's like, I just updated her computer to Windows 10 maybe a week or two ago. I wanted all the bugs to shake out, you know, before we did it. She's like, it's asking me to update, and it's asking me to delete something before it updates. Can I do that? And I'm just like,
what's it say?
Yeah, like, what's it say? And instead, props to Leslie, who is my fiance, for anyone who doesn't know. Props to Leslie for being like, we'll deal with this later. You just bring it over. He'll take care of it. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Bring it over. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
my wife just hands me the phone when they call her and asks to talk to me. And when my mother-in-law calls me, it's like she only calls me when there's a computer problem.
So you see her number pop up and you know there's something wrong.
Yeah.
It's you know, but Windows 10, you know, I'm running Windows 10 in Fusion, and I use Windows 10 primarily for the pinball software that Gabe and I do as our side hobby, just to make sure it runs on, you know, the other platforms and stuff. And Windows 10 is very aggressive in terms of auto updates and auto reboots and that kind of stuff. And I actually haven't figured out fully how to. I thought I had turned it off. And about a week ago, it updated to they did like the first like major Windows 10 update, I think. Like, I don't know if they're calling it service packs or whatever. But that actually broke Fusion. It broke the it broke the folder sharing. So I couldn't actually it broke my VM because I couldn't actually access the folders, you know, that have all the pinball software in it. And I spent probably an hour like reapplying VMware tools, removing, resetting, you know, admin, all this kind of stuff. Couldn't get it worked out. Then the very next day, Fusion says we have an update, and you read the readme, and it's like, we fixed a problem with, you know, folder sharing. And I'm like, God damn it, because I didn't ask for it. Like, I just turned on, like, the Windows 10, you know, it'll auto update and put itself back, so you don't even really know that it does it. It's only when you click on, you know, click through and see that it updated last night. But I had a fully working computer, you know, I went to bed, and I came on. And then last night,
man, that just, you know, the question of, like, there are events recently, I'm like asking, like, hey, you know, Windows 10, do you have plans yet? Interested in any particular features or anything? And man, that
well, it's been my understanding that the security updates or whatever they're doing are like not optional. You can't disable that, maybe with the registry or something.
So that's what I was going to say, because last night I was telling were talking about this in the pre-podcast chat, is there's a guy who walks down the center of my street a couple times a week and just screams profanities at the top of his lungs, like just absolute screaming. And he was removed forcibly from the neighborhood last night by police, an ambulance, and two fire trucks.
Oh, wow.
This is about 3:30 a.m. And the reason I mentioned that last night was because he stopped now, but he's back. So whatever they did to remove this person who was like beating on trash cans and screaming, they removed him. 6 hours later, he's back. But anyway, so I was awake because of that. And while I'm awake, I hear the Windows 10 boot sound coming on because I like in the other room, you know, I'm like, oh, what the? Because I turned you off. But Justin, to your point, because even after Windows 10 auto-updated itself a week ago, I went through and reconfirmed that I did not tell it not to do updates on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it doesn't care. So I thought I had shut off all the updates, and sure enough, it updated last night because I wanted to.
The one thing I'll give them maybe credit for on this one is I think they're tired of everyone having security holes and then getting blamed for it. So I guess this is their way of being like, you know.
Now, they're getting more aggressive because literally 4 minutes ago, and I just did a screenshot of this, my Office 2016 for Mac pops up saying there's an update.
Hmm.
And you guys, Jack, and actually all you, we're all Mac users. You guys will see this too. The date of this update is 12/14/2015. So today's the 11th.
Wow.
So they Microsoft is now, yeah, they're so aggressive. They're pushing out updates.
They're coming from
the future.
Future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good for them.
So how'd you get? Okay, so as a kid, you're a computer nerd, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of ours. But how do you tie in? Because we hired you to be like a video guy, not a computer guy. You know.
Right. Yeah. So. I mean, I went to college for actually completely unrelated stuff. My parents and family members were like, you should go for programming. You should go for, you know, computer-related things. And me being a moron, I was like, oh, no, I don't want to ruin my hobby with a job, you know? And so, you know, I very wisely went into psychology and communications, which are like BS and pay nothing. So I finished college and I worked for a medical system for a little while. And did something completely unrelated to the medical system. But while I was there, it's kind of funny. The hospital that I worked for, they have a surprisingly terrible ability to like run databases and stuff like that. So while I was there, I ended up building a lot of stuff in Microsoft Access for them, which in itself is kind of a horrible thing to use. But
it works.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So I got to at least say, oh, you know, I did stuff for a medical system from the, you know, IT perspective, sort of.
But your actual job was in no way actually related.
No way related, no. But, you know, I'd still dabbled with stuff at home. Like, I kept building my computers. I was a big proponent of, like, 3D software and applications and things like that. I like rendering stuff in 3D, and I still played all my computer games and crap like that. So when I decided to go back to grad school after 3 years of being in the workforce. And when I did that, I decided to go into another profession that pays literally nothing, which is journalism, because I had really high aspirations and thought, you know, the world needed more truth and stuff like that in it. So
the wide-eyed youth.
Yeah, right. But because of the nerdy factor, I did broadcast journalism, which is slightly more laughable than really regular journalism anyway. But
video and audio.
Yeah, I like the video and audio aspects.
The term broadcast journalism means journalism, but video and audio, not writing.
Right. Right? Yeah, it means being on like TV news.
Yeah.
After I was there for a little while, I realized I don't like being in front of the camera. I like being behind it. And it was pretty cool because while we were there, we had a whole like control station. We would do like broadcasts for the network that was on campus. You know, but it was all very straight-faced. We had a green screen, and we had, like, news packages and everything. It was really cool, and I really liked doing that. So the nerdy aspect sort of, like, started popping out there. And what ended up happening was all my friends who were in the program, I ended up helping a lot of them with their editing and stuff like that. Like, I was one of the only people that had his own camera, so they'd come to my house really late at night if they needed to borrow a camera, or they'd bring their laptop over and we'd like work on their news package together, stuff like that. So I got into it that way, and then right after graduate school and kind of during graduate school, my internship was with a technology news company who covered like consumer oriented stuff, you know, like iPhones and everything. So it all kind of came full circle. I got to work with things that I liked in a method I liked to work with it. And then that eventually, you know, led me to you guys.
And that's what you were doing, right? That's what you were doing before, before you worked for us. But at the time, okay. Yeah. So how does it go? So you live in San Francisco now. Yeah. The job is in San Francisco. Like, we posted the job, and we had like our job description. I'd have to go back and look at it. It's probably not.
I ran across it the other day when I was working on the website. It's
probably
still there.
Pretty accurate, I guess, because because at the time we weren't doing these funny videos because we didn't know how to like edit and stuff, but we needed someone to do all stuff, you know, run the camera, edit, you know, like sit down interviews we do, you know, podcast.
Yeah, it's very podcast stuff. Heavy.
Stuff so like how did we put this job out, you know, in San Francisco, but you were in Boston at the time. So how did that like?
Right. So, you know, TechTarget obviously based in Boston. And it's funny, the job description, at least I think I found it through the TechTarget site, not through like brianmadden.com.
Were you looking or?
Yeah, well, I was looking for jobs. I'm guessing at the time I probably found you through like indeed.com or something like that. One of those like job search engines.
Or Mosaic.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And I'm trying to remember at the time I was applying with, it was like you guys and some company that was like a paint company. But they also wanted a multimedia person. I can't remember why, and like maybe one other company. But so you guys, the job posting it sounded like I fit pretty well. I didn't obviously know anything about like brianmadden.com or you know VDI stuff really. I wasn't up on that. But I remember the job listing did not describe San Francisco. at all. So I think it was the third interview, and I'm pretty sure that was maybe with Gabe or you, I'm not sure. It was then mentioned it was in San Francisco. It was like pretty late in the process. So
sounds about right.
But that was okay because one, I was trying to move to California. I had originally wanted to live in San Diego. Because at the time I had a friend living there who I went to high school with, and he was like my best friend, so I was down for living there. But the other thing was I was just sick of the cold in Boston. So, you know, never having snow ever again is really appealing to me. And so when you guys mentioned that,
it worked out.
Yeah, no, it totally worked out. And so I was totally happy with that. It was just, you know, moving here is difficult. So, but my apartment lease was almost up. A lot of my friends from graduate school had moved on to other things in other cities. So I was like, fine with leaving Boston. Didn't really bother me.
So what do you remember? So this time, this is before Jack. You know, mm-hmm. Jack worked with us before we were at TechTarget. And then when we sold the company to TechTarget, Jack went to grad school. So he was and then he came back after grad school. So he was in grad school at the time. Mariah, were you at TechTarget, Mariah? Mariah started working with us, our team, like 2 or 3 years ago. And you were at TechTarget before, but I don't know if you were. When did you come to TechTarget, Mariah?
It was the end of April 2010.
Okay, so you had just joined TechTarget, but we didn't know you because there was like hundreds of employees here. So you were just some random Boston TechTarget.
Yeah, I mean, you and I had done webcasts together, but I don't think you remember me.
Oh, really? Oh, I have no.
Wait, really?
Oh, my gosh. I want to find those. I want to go back through my archive and find our like email correspondence. It's probably like the same as it is now.
Hey,
like,
Brian, I really need this by Tuesday. Can you get it to me?
Yeah.
And then, hey, Brian, I really needed this yesterday. Can you get it to me?
Yeah.
And
I imagine her being more polite to him at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you weren't really my problem at that point.
Right. I am now.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I'm going back through my archive, my email archive to see.
It would have been for Dell. It would have been Dell Webcasts because I was managing the Dell account.
I can only page through 100 at a time, down to 1,800 emails. I just searched for the name Rye, and the way your name is spelled is kind of unique, so it's easy enough to filter on that. Mm-hmm. Here we go. My first email with you on it that I have is from July of 2011.
Yep.
Weekly Dell TechTarget con call. When did you join our team, Mariah? Do you know?
It was like December 2012, 2013. Okay, I think I moved out here in spring 2013.
So, yeah, look at all this stuff. All these emails with you on it. It's all a webcast. It's the Omnipresence bar.
Oh, that thing. Oh, F that thing. Updating that was the worst.
Yep.
It was a cool concept. So,
is it the Wibia bar?
It was that menu bar along the bottom of BrianMadden.com, and we could put graphics and little pop-up. Yeah. I thought that was a great product. I mean, it's a product offering that was great. It was the implementation of it.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest problem, was the implementation, and there was no reporting. You know, you guys didn't hook into the reporting that TechTarget used, and we had to use your site reporting, and it just got crazy.
I think it came through me, so maybe you talked to me, but it was always can you get the stats? And so I'd go to the Wibia website, and their stats basically consisted of how many people had seen it and how many people had clicked it. That was it.
That's all I really needed.
And it would always, oh, man. Mm-hmm. That's the first company since living here. You know, when you live here, everything is startup. That was the first company I'd ever got a sense of what it was like to see a startup or company sort of failing in action, slowly. Because the Wibia thing was great when we started using it. And then the website they'd update something, but it wouldn't work well. And then the next time it would work even less, and you couldn't get in. And then eventually the whole thing just sort of failed out. You could tell that there was no money or people behind it anymore.
So Justin, so you joined, when you joined us, it was just me and Gabe.
Yep.
Gabe was always in Omaha. Mm-hmm. So I don't recall. I mean, what do you remember from that? So we hire you, you show up. I assume you knock at the door on TechTarget on your first day.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, let's see. So whoever the person was sitting at the desk, I guess, answered. So it would have been Carlina. Carlina answered the door. I came in. I thought the whole place was a scam.
It's about right.
Because there was no signage. The carpet looked like it hadn't been cleaned in years, and it was just like a cubicle farm, but no people. That office was, there was one third the number of people as there were desks.
I don't know if we ever filled that office.
We didn't. Maybe during a sales meeting if people were here.
I don't know if our old office, the old San Francisco TechTarget office, is about twice the size
physically
of the office that we have now. And we have 40 people out here, 30, 40 people.
We used to have more, though, I think, when I started here.
Maybe once it got expensive, they'd move people back. I don't know how that is exactly. But but I don't even, how did they even work in those early days? I don't remember what.
What did we do daily?
Yeah, you came in.
Let's see. You were really excited about me being there. So I feel like we ended up just trying to improve literally everything. You know, you walked me into our studio, which was just a mess. And to your credit, it worked, for you. And that was great. But it was a complete mess, I remember. And you were like, can you make this better? And I'm like, yes, I think I can. As I stared at the light clipped to the tripod, clipped to the desk. Top, trying to and we did. So
a lot of that stuff that immediately you started using, your big college words, we need a graphics package, and I'm like, you mean Photoshop? And you're like, no, that's not what that means. I mean, just standardizing, because everything we did was very manual, and
I think that's really what it was a lot of our time was just spent sort of figuring out what we had, making things work more efficiently or whatever, and then saying to you, what do you want to do? And you'd want to do more podcasts in a live fashion, and we made that happen. So I guess that's just how we spent a lot of our time. And this was before these big, video projects.
And then, so these video projects, the very first of these sort of, fun videos that we did. So again, I'm saying that like trying to be in the format of a short film and not a sit down head to head interview, was for Citrix, and it was for their go to manage or
which doesn't exist anymore. It was go to manage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where we did the Brian versus Brian series. So it was done where. Brian, that's where we invented the character of Brian, the IT guy, and bought the costume that we still use now, which is like trying to be the dorky IT costume. So like short sleeve, white shirt with Dockers and like big chunky shoes.
And we don't wash it to keep it realistic.
And yeah. I remember, so that was one of my first big projects, because that we were filming that September, October, 2011. And I had come in at the end of August, 2011. And I remember spending like a couple of weeks figuring out like, okay, we need to shoot these sections of these scripts and these locations. And it was like three videos, and each videos kind of had like two parts.
And they were all different.
And so I had like color-coded spreadsheets of which actors we needed in which locations for which sessions. And
this is the campaign where we try to do like sliding doors and stuff too, yes. Right? Where Brian makes a decision that affects the rest of his day. And so like we bit off a lot, like probably more than we could chew. For
looking
this.
Back, like why did we, I mean, I know why we accepted that contract. I'm sure it was for the money, but like, why did we, why did we say that was okay? Or like who even thought it was
me.
A good idea to suggest that? Was it you?
That was us.
That was
okay,
me. Because,
all right.
So what happened was they wanted to, cause every vendor wants, you know, creative, fun. It's like everyone on a dating website. Like, who
wanted to go
for?
Viral?
I want some. Mm. Yeah, everyone wants to date someone who's like fun and funny and smart and intelligent and witty. Like, that's, you know, like everyone wants that. But the number of people in the world who like that are like 1%. So, you know,
right.
And that vendors are the same way, where they all want some campaign, some idea that's new and fresh and fun and gonna get people talking. You know, not been done before. And you know, at Tech Target, all of our products are very like formulaic, so we can do white paper, sit down interview, you know, whiteboard session, webcast, like that kind of stuff. And Citrix had wanted to do something, and this is actually, it was with Citrix Online. So Citrix Online, they're sort of like a sub. Like, they're not even really part – they're like a sub – what do I want to say? Not a subdivision. But
subsidiary.
Yeah, like, because they're headquartered actually in Santa Barbara, not in Santa Clara. So they're down by kind of closer to L.A., and they're like a different – like, different buildings, different P&L, all that kind of stuff. And so they're sort of more small and, like, nimble and witty and all edgy, whatever you want to say. And so I proposed this idea that we could make these kind of, like, funny videos where I'm actually playing a character. That was the big thing. Like, in this one, I was going to – play a character. I was not going to play myself, and that we had never sort of done before.
Right.
And you know, and shooting it single camera, which means like different edits, like in cuts as we're doing stuff. And I remember very much, very clearly, the conversation with them when they were saying like, can you show us some examples of when you've done this before? And I said, no, we've never done this before. And they're like, well, how do you know? Because they were very, there's a lot of pushback that they didn't want to do this. And I remember telling them in a meeting, where I said, look, you know, I have my own reputation in the industry, and I don't want to ruin that, and I don't want to be embarrassed. Like, I personally guarantee you, I'm going to do something that is worthy of me standing behind, because I don't want to do some embarrassing piece of garbage any more than you want an embarrassing piece of garbage. So I said, I don't know, I can't show you I can't show you any examples. I can just tell you, I personally guarantee that we will make something that's good.
It won't suck.
And they were like, and that did it. They're like, okay, let's pull the trigger. And I remember before that point, Justin, you know, because you had been around for like a year at that point almost, mm-hmm. and we had talked about if this was possible. And I know that you were a movie buff, and so I'm like, well, he knows how to, you know, use a camera and use like Adobe Premiere, and he watches a lot of movies. So
that's all it takes.
That's all it takes. And do you remember I asked you to shoot? I said, shoot something in your house. Just shoot something in your house in the style. I think you shot like making breakfast.
It was me getting up in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, do we still have that footage? That'd be fantastic.
I think I have it at home.
Because that was just to show the different cuts. Because, you know, like the way movies are, you start with like your hand on the frying pan, a cut to the egg, cut to the crack, cut to the face, cut, you know. So we, you know, in those days, you know, we had to think out every single shot, and I think we missed a bunch of shots that we didn't know about in like continuity, and yeah. You know, because the way these, you know, these type of things are shot is you have a scene, you have a shot, and you shoot it like five times from one camera angle. You do the same exact thing. Then you do it five times again from a different camera angle, then five times again from a different camera angle, and five times again from a different camera angle. And you try to do everything exactly the same, including like not just holding the can in your left hand at all times, but even like the placement of where your fingers are and how your elbow is, so that when you're like mid action, it all kind of lines up. And it was, you know, Jack, you mentioned about how those took so much planning going into those earlier ones. And I was sort of, I was struck, you know, the last video we did, like, I mean, like the last Justin video at Tech Target is for Simplivity. That video has not yet been released. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's I think they just confirmed it like today.
We shot this 2 weeks ago at I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. We shot this at a grocery store, and we rented out a grocery store at night about 2 weeks ago. So we got in there like 8 at night and like shot all night. But I remember how different it was, because you and I now, after doing 78 of these videos, I think,
mm-hmm.
it became so second nature. Like, now we know what shots we need. We know continuity. We know, you know, like you, like we know all the angles. We know exactly what we have to do. And I remember, you know, in that first one, like, to Jack's point, just having spreadsheets and highlighters and working really, really, really hard to put these things together.
Now, going on what Jack was saying with that, at one point we were doing like three of these a week through one summer for two different companies at once. And we had made Jack sort of like the manager or producer. What would we call you?
I don't know. We just knew that between the two of us, we had to make 50 videos over the course of about 4.5 months.
Right.
Now, these were only like 30 to 60 seconds long.
Still a lot of work.
But that was... And that was especially like 2012 was the kind of like the golden era of Brian traveling like 200,000 miles a year. So it'd be Justin and I hanging out and like, we need to crank out some other videos this week. We have a bunch of old laptops and a bunch of old phones. How can we make a video?
Yeah, there are long stretches where the videos basically feature Jack. Jack's the star.
And we've like all together.
Chef, like,
so
here's a pile of ingredients.
Yeah,
but it's just like the way sitcoms work, because, you know, there'll be times when like an actor in a sitcom is off making a movie and there'll be three episodes where they're not really around. And like in Seinfeld, when Julia Louis-Dreyfus was pregnant and she was away, there was a whole bunch of Seinfelds like where the Elaine character was like off in Europe with her therapist or traveling with David Putty in Europe. And like, so she has some scenes, but you don't realize that her actual involvement is only like 45 seconds in the entire episode. And they just, you know, make it like very easy for her. Like the entire time she's sitting in a chair and, you know, just they could like go in and out and shoot the whole thing in 2 hours for her.
Yeah.
Look at this coin. It's got a hole in it.
So, you know, in those days, we always have our budget for creating these videos. And you know, we did 30 videos for BlackBerry. And it was about like why you need MDM, and all these videos, even to this day, we don't do like hardcore commercials. It's more like these are like issue videos. So we had 30 videos about why MDM is good, and we weren't saying, "Hey, you should use BlackBerry." We were just saying, you know, 30 videos about why you need MDM, and then for GoToAssist, we did 20 videos on like why having remote management is good, and for each of those, we had like a $2,000 production budget or whatever. And we just knew, but I remember running through those, like, again, kind of the same way that they do, like, sitcoms, where we were working on, like, five videos at any given time. And, you know, the video we're going to shoot 5 weeks out, we had rough concepts. 4 weeks out, we had a script. 3 weeks out, we had props. 2 weeks out, we shot. Next week's video, we were in the process of editing. And that continuously rolling process went for, like, those 4 months.
Yeah, and we all got very tired as a result of it.
Yeah.
I think.
And those videos were shot mostly in and around San Francisco. We didn't get too crazy in terms of locations. I think most of the locations were either either my house or
the office
yeah. or like around the city of San Francisco somewhere.
Yeah, which is a great backdrop.
There's one in from Omaha.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a few, like, and I was traveling, like Jack said, that year I was a United, they call it a United 2K flyer, which I literally had 200,000 earned miles,
crazy,
like button seat miles from United. And I shot one in Singapore. Yeah.
In a pool.
Yeah, I was at the top of the pool on top of that like crazy hotel that had the infinity pool at like the 60th floor. And I remember I was speaking at an event for like Quest Software. And after the event was over, before we flew out, I grabbed like, you know, the project manager from Quest, and I was like, "Hey, come up to the roof with me, the roof pool," and I threw on my swimsuit.
Hold this camera.
Yeah, and we shot it on an iPhone.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, "Just hold the camera right here," and I set the iPad next to the pool. We had the shot of the infinity pool looking over like downtown Singapore. Well, I guess all Singapore is downtown, but and I emerged out of the pool, Sea Monster style, picked up the iPad and started using it. And that was because you shot the other end of the video, which was like, "Hey, where's Brian? Like, we need him to support us." And then the people were like, "Oh my gosh, my computer's fixing itself. Look at this." And then it cuts to me coming out of the pool in Singapore.
That must be a really iconic hotel or something, because I saw it in a commercial. I saw the exact same angle. I mean, like, to the degree. And I'm like, "Hey, I've seen that pool before." And then sure enough, I mean the exact same angle. Like, it was the
same
frame.
Well, you know what? I'll bet you this is the reason, like, when my dad visited here in San Francisco, he wanted a picture of himself in front of, like, the full houses, right, as tourists call them.
And there's probably only one, like, 1 square meter shot.
Well, I got the camera. He's standing there. I'm like, "Take back, stop, wait, 2 steps to the right, stop, right there." I take the picture, and I look down, and he's standing in a 1 meter circle of dirt. where the grass is worn out.
Where everybody else has done the same thing, yeah.
So I would imagine, you know, because this rooftop pool has, like, deck chairs and a bar and lampposts and trees, like palm trees. And then, of course, Singapore, there's mountains, there's downtown. Like, so I think there's probably only one angle you can shoot where you don't get too much extra pool stuff and you get the nice building skyscraper background and, you know, all that sort of thing.
The look you're going for. Yeah.
Yeah. But so we, you know, so then, at, so that was our anchor. We did like 50 of those videos, you know, that year. And then we, I think, started expanding and doing some other kind of like more interesting locations and more interesting, you know, storylines and that kind of stuff. And so, like, we did some cool things, like the Maker Fair one, I think, is one that I like a lot.
I like that a lot, and I'm sad I think most people don't know about it, because that's actually one of our cooler projects, in my opinion.
Tell us about that one.
So they came to us, and I don't, what was the tie-in? It was Citrix, and they...
I think it was the go-to people, too, that they just wanted to show nerds in action.
Yeah, the tagline was "Be Mighty," that's all I remember. but yeah, they were like, "We want you guys to do something cool and like that's about nerds." And we were like, "Well, this Maker Faire thing is awesome. You know, it's just people getting together, building really neat stuff and showing it off." So Maker Faire San Francisco had already passed. Was that the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we found out there was another one in Flushing Meadows in New York. So we went there, and it was just one day. And we walked around, Brian, Gabe, and myself, we just walked around and interviewed every person we could find that was doing something really awesome.
And we got actual, like, press credentials, which I always thought was funny, that, like, BrianMadden.com qualified as, like, real media. So we
of
got,
all
like,
the badges that I've had over the years, that's one of two that I've saved.
Really?
Yeah, just because that's cool. Like, press credentials to Maker Faire, that's pretty neat to me.
That is neat. Yeah, and so we, I mean, there were a lot of neat things there. There was a guy who made a video game, but out of, like, scrolling pieces of paper, which was neat. There was people with, like, submarines. There was a lot of 3D printing stuff, because that was, like, the rage.
Yeah, and I blame that show for getting me excited about 3D printing.
Yeah.
We were always pretty good at, you know, we had a production budget, and we recognized, like all good corporate citizens recognize, that you can spend as much as your budget and no one asks any questions. You can't spend more than your budget. If you spend less than your budget, you know, what they do is just give you less budget for the next video. and we also knew that we couldn't get any equipment Like we started on a shoestring. Like the video camera that TechTarget used for 5 years, I bought with my own money and actually just got reimbursed for like 6 months ago. Because it was really like at some point, it's like we need a real camera. We can't use like the camcorder, you know, that we had.
Right.
And so over the years, all of our equipment we have, I think every single one of those we tied to a project and just figured out. So I remember that was the one that was we used to justify buying a GoPro.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Justin and I had a late night trip to the Best Buy by Barclays Center.
That's right.
to buy. Yeah.
Which we used for one underwater shot of like an autonomous robot submarine that they had set up in a swimming pool at Maker Faire. And we put the GoPro underwater and like had the submarine in action.
But, you know, worth pointing out, that GoPro has actually seen a lot of action professionally because with the drone later. So
yeah,
and, we get a lot of use out of that.
Comma, we also bought a drone.
And we bought a drone, yeah.
But, you know, so and the Maker Faire one was cool. And so we were there and shooting all the interviews. And then we shot the show in Gabe's garage in Omaha.
But it looks awesome.
Because we wanted to do like Brian and Gabe are hosting this geek show, and we put the, you know, it's just like when we go to conferences, we had all these interviews that Justin edited down, and then we sort of hosted it from Gabe's garage. And did you go to Omaha? I don't remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We spent, I don't know, what were we there, like 3 days or something?
Something like that. I still have the tape marks on the floor from really? Where we had our chairs, the stools.
but Gabe's and, garage yeah, was and, perfect.
And I still have the soundproofing or the sound like absorbing foam up in the corners too.
Oh yeah,
it makes for a nice quiet garage. But yeah, that was the closest thing that we had access to that looked like a workshop. And you know, it was my place too, so that was cool. Yeah, that's one of only I think two videos that we shot here. But that was a fun. Yeah, that was a really fun project.
Yeah,
you know, and over the time, you know, our production values got better, but also Justin, I think your skills got better because especially when we were doing those 50 videos that one summer. You know, yeah. You like if for your own professional development, we're always learning new products and learning new like how to do graphics and how to do like 3D animation. And I remember like with the BlackBerry videos, there's one of them that involved like laser beams and like explosions. And you actually like blew up.
Oh yeah, laptops. Everything's like composited. There's no actual explosions in our office, but they look pretty convincing.
Even having like the reflection of the explosion like in the window in the background.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
I can't wait until you use that particular skill at your new job.
Blowing up cars? I don't know if they'd like that.
Well, but no, I feel like you learn a new skill and you're like, hey, I think I can do explosions now, and we're like, all right, we need to write a video that involves an explosion.
Right. Well, I think it's worth noting Jack really likes explosions in our videos because we. We have to do trailers every so often for these. And
how does that even work? Like, how, I mean,
explosions?
Like, yeah. How do you put an explosion in a video?
Yeah. Well, so somebody somebody creates like a composite video for you. So somebody basically filmed an explosion of some kind, probably with like gasoline or something. They film it against either a green screen or a black screen, and then they just key that color out of it. So all you're left with is the explosion. So you can purchase this stuff, these composite videos, and which we did, and then you lay it over your existing footage, and you know you have to tweak it a little bit and play with it and make it like kind of work into the scene appropriately. But
I know some of these things, like you put the camera on, like let's say we want to blow up a phone,
yeah,
put the camera on a tripod, you set the phone on the desk, record it, and then you take the phone away, but the camera doesn't move, so you can do like a jump cut. That since the camera's on a tripod, the phone just essentially disappears, and then you put in the explosion. And then how do you like make the phone actually blowing up? You like 3D animate that or something?
Kinda. It's all like trickery, yeah. So you what you do is you separate the phone out, like you kind of just cut it out of a frame, you know, and then you can just apply what's called a shatter effect to it. And the shatter effect basically just randomly selects like ways to break it apart, you know, in two dimensions. And you can control like the speed and the angle, and there's ways to like apply 3D effects to it to make the pieces fly, you know, in three axes instead of two and stuff like that. So when you mix that together with the explosion, it's pretty hard to tell that it's all fake. And you know, one of the advantages we have over something like Hollywood is we're doing everything in a relatively low resolution. You know, people aren't watching it on a 70-foot screen. They're watching it on like their laptop. So if it's not quite perfect or whatever.
Yeah, we can literally take good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Like blurring things is actually advantageous to us, you know.
So. I'm convinced that I've seen the same fire effect in an episode of How I Met Your Mother that we used in the one where the where you guys are having
the
laser fight.
They purchased
the
same stock explosion video.
Yeah, that's
and
very
possible. There's definitely one club scene in that series somewhere early in one of the early seasons where they're definitely using a GarageBand song. As for like the music,
it doesn't cost anything. Why not?
You know? Oh yeah, right. But it's it, but it's one of the songs that we've used in the past. And so as soon as I heard it. You know, it, I'm like, ah, I got you.
Right.
So how, let me ask, okay, the other thing that, that I've been sort of like most impressed that you've done, Justin, is when you, I'm going to use these terms incorrectly. Like everyone knows how you can like Photoshop a photo, like either add something mm-hmm. in or change something or morph it or take something out.
Yeah.
But you have done the equivalent of like, let's say Photoshopping a video. So I'll give two examples. One video we did. Had it had to show the character Brian, the IT guy, like relaxing at the end of a hard day, and he's like sitting like in a park with a beer next to him, and it's a shot with the drone. So the drone pulls out and it goes in the sky, and then gets this huge pan and shows him like relaxing by the city. It's a very cool shot. But the customer didn't want a beer bottle because they didn't want to have like alcohol in their video. So first phase is you like edited out the label of the beer bottle and changed it to say like you know soda or whatever. And but even though the video was moving, and then but that wasn't good enough. And the second one, then you replaced the actual bottle with the can, but it was in a moving video. So, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's harder.
And by the way, in the second video is this video all, for Simplivity that we shot. We had a picture of their appliance in one of our in the scene. And because we were shooting this video at the grocery store all night long, we forgot to put, like, the bezel on their appliance, so it didn't have, like, their logo on it. And you also, like, edited the bezel back into the appliance.
That was at least a stationary shot.
So yeah, no, that's what made that easy.
No, but when I picked
it up, you were moving
box,
in front of it.
Yeah, and I hit the table, and the table jiggles.
Yeah.
And, like, it looks pretty when you watch it. I don't know how you do that.
Is this frame-by-frame editing? Like, I'm so scared for you that it is.
It can be. Yeah, like there's tricks to help you along, but a lot of it's frame by frame. So okay, well, to answer your question about the beer bottle is a lot more difficult. So what you have to do is you have to 3D model a new object first. So in this case, we were like, let's go with a soda can. And I think I made it like orange or something because like who – there's no such thing as like an orange beer can, I hope. So you make that. And it looks pretty rough, which is fine. You give it like a basic texture and lighting and everything. What you then have to go in, you go back into the scene, your original shot, and you have to basically first get a motion track of your original camera movement, right? So you need to know how your camera was moving to start with.
So you just pick a point and then...
You pick multiple points
yeah,
and it
true.
Tracks them. And in this case, it's very tricky because the drone is not smooth, right? So it kind of like wobbles and it, you know, it also pulls out, so you're getting different perspectives and angles in like real time. But what you can do is you can take all that tracking data, and it's ridiculously valuable. You can drop it into these other 3D applications, like something called Cinema 4D. And what it does is it understands the tracking data. You build a 3D world around the tracking data, and you basically then have like a virtual camera moving in virtual space. And then you drop your soda can in. And you can actually like lay the old footage underneath your virtual world. You bring the can in. You make sure it's covering the right space where the bottle was. And then as the camera moves, your virtual camera moves, it also moves in relation to your 3D object, right? So
you're basically resetting up the entire shot in 3D world.
In 3D world, yeah.
And I guess you have to set like the focal length and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can the software is nice because it already has it understands optics basically, so you can just give it like the specs from what you shot in on your camera, and it'll be reasonably close to like what you were shooting. So what you end up with is just this video of a soda can in nothingness moving. You're moving away from it in this case, and it doesn't look like anything on its own. But when you bring that in and overlay it over the original footage. it's perfect or close to perfect, and you know, you can like tweak it and mess with it.
I almost
want to
see. It's too bad we didn't have you do like examples of this where we show the original pullout and then you like fade in and then show the
over
video
the top.
Just the can and then yeah.
If we'd had more time, we could have done like a making of.
But
like, you know, the SimpliVity video, that's actually really easy. Like Gabe said, it's a static shot, so you don't have to deal with camera movement, which is the ultimate pain in the ass. So in this case, what you're doing is they wanted their bezel back in there, right? So all I did was I took a screenshot of our movie we made. I downloaded an app for my phone, actually, called Overlay Camera. I dropped that picture into Overlay Camera. And what that does is it lets you literally overlay one image over another. So I had that picture like half faded down so you could see through it, and I just set up the camera in our office here with their appliance with the bezel on and took a picture of the appliance from the exact same angle we shot the original video from.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And then I was able to just cut out the bezel from that image.
So you did that like on the green screen or whatever?
Not even. I could just do that in Photoshop because, like, whatever.
Oh, it's a static image, right?
Yeah, it's easy. So I took that. I drop it into the video. And then, yeah, like Gabe also said, the only complicated part, I guess, is that you're moving in front of it. And Adobe After Effects has just this really nifty tool that lets you just delete parts of a layer in, like, real time. You put points, and it creates, like, a border. And you can move those points from frame to frame to change the shape of the area you're cutting out. So what I do is I just draw a shape around you, and then each frame I adjust those points to follow you. And as those points move over the bezel, they cut that part out of the bezel that you're covering, and we see you instead.
So is that how you did – one of my favorite videos from like technical I don't know what you call it, awesomeness, is the one where like I build this cloning machine.
Oh yeah.
And there's four of me. We'll find all these videos and post them in the show notes, but there's four of me kind of like on this frame at the exact same time.
And kind of interacting.
I clone myself, and this is one of the videos for like Go to Assist, so it's like, you know, unless you have a cloning machine, you need, you know, easier support. But there's actual shots of like four Brians helping users, and like I'm talking to myself and interacting with myself all at the same time.
Yeah, that's actually it's a really basic version of that, because in that we just shot you in four locations that are identical. Like, it's a static camera shot. We shot you in four places, and then we just cut the frames out around you in those four places. And when it's all together, no one can tell where the edges are, but we see you in all of them. It's like basic version.
So as long as I don't
You don't cross into the area of the other Brian.
Yeah, and I can even cross into the area. I just can't cross over the other Brian.
Yeah.
And it's a space-time continuum kind of thing. You can't touch yourself in the past.
Well, what's actually funny about this kind of stuff is, you know, it's relatively complex if you wanted to, like, have the two Brians interacting with each other. Like, what if you wanted two Brians high-fiving, right? Like, that'd be really hard to do. You look back at a movie like Back to the Future 2, I guess it is? Yeah, Back to the Future 2, where, you know, they go back in time and forward in time and everything. And at one point, the Biff character is in a car with himself, and it's the same actor. He's just different ages, and he's like handing stuff to himself. I think they touch each other or punch each other at one point, something like that. They did this all in camera on a rig. Like, the rig moved the exact same way, and they used these mirrors and everything. And then when in post, all they had to do was cut the two pieces of film together, and everything worked. That blows my mind.
Yeah, like, and they even did that for, like, television, even in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation and stuff like that. Sci-fi especially had crazy stuff that I always wondered how they pulled that off, because,
I mean,
the technology just wasn't there like it is today.
Well, even so back in the
manual.
What was it, the 60s? What was that TV show that Disney produced with the girl who played – she played two characters?
Oh, Parent Trap.
Yeah, Parent Trap.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if she ever interacts with herself in that movie, but just doing that kind of blows my mind. Like, having...
Yeah, like, they didn't have twins. They actually had one actress.
Yeah. And that just seems like so much work.
They
like,
did it in the 50s.
It was Miss Bliss.
Didn't they?
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, 60s. The Patty Duke show, too.
Wow.
Like, it was one girl, Patty Duke, and she played identical cousins. And so there was a TV show in the 60s, not even a movie with like a real budget, but a TV show even did it. And I'm sure it was like goofy tricks where she's standing in front of a movie screen right. when they're interacting and stuff like that. But still, like, yeah, that imagine yeah. like they're looking at us going, man, you guys have it so easy.
Well, that's the thing. We take this all for granted, right? Like so that beer can thing took me 3 days to do. I complain about 3 days where that's ridiculous. Come on. You know, I mean, they wouldn't have even been able to do something like that, or they'd have to go and probably sell paint it frame by frame like back in the day, and it would take them weeks and cost God knows what.
Yeah, or reshoot it all together.
Yeah, or just reshoot it. So, yeah, we take it all for granted that, you know, this is really
easy. It
was
kind of funny that for you, we make, like, you know, because I'm busy doing, like, the rest of my job, it is kind of like the way it probably is in actual Hollywood, where it's like, well, Brian's not available. So you got to figure out how to make it work on this video.
Yeah, but I know it's fun. Like I've really enjoyed learning this kind of stuff because it takes time, and it's certainly the kind of thing I think a lot of, just based on like internet forums, I think a lot of teenagers mess around with it on their own because they have like summer vacation and they need something to do. But if it was just me, I don't think if I didn't have a reason to be doing it, I probably wouldn't sit and learn nearly as much of it. So these videos were nice because they gave me reasons to learn these things.
And it's pretty varied. I mean, because, like, yeah. you know, one of my favorite videos is the one we did for Intel with the tablet, where, like, the tablet's animated. Now, I know a lot of people hate that video because of the tablet's voice.
That's my voice.
Which was actually
yeah, that's me.
Justin's voice.
Not yeah, my real voice, thankfully.
I mean, I'm one of the ones that hates it because of the voice. But it wasn't your real voice. It was
Gabe. Why do you hate me?
It's like fingernails on a chalkboard.
I don't mind
that sound.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Like I liked it, but
it's my favorite from a technical standpoint.
It's a great video.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on in that video.
Yeah, that one's like, I don't know if anyone ever appreciates it. That video has so much going on from like the technical side. It's actually my favorite because we did so much with like we did rack focuses, we did special effects, we did like facial animation, we did
okay,
so
what's
many
a rack
things.
Focus?
What's that?
It's a rack focus.
It's when you're focusing from like one point in the scene to another point. So, you know, a lot of shows will have like a person standing behind another person and they'll be talking and the person who's talking will be in focus and then they'll like change focus to the other person.
So do you have set focus points or positions then? Like I'm picturing this with like a focus ring. Like do you have like stops that you can dial in so you can just switch from one to the other really fast?
So unfortunately, when we were making this, we did not. So everything was done manually. So I think we had to reshoot like the rack focus probably like 9 times.
You could put like a little piece of tape on the camera, also on the rings to kind of
get
us close. Yeah.
But it was at Jack's apartment because Jack has this really sweet apartment that we used as a psychologist's office. And so I think the way it starts off is we see the sign on the door that says like Dr. Madden or whatever, and then it rack focuses through the glass in the door to Jack, like talking to the tablet. And yeah, I think we had to shoot it like eight or nine times because I would just like over focus or under focus like a bunch of times. And they make a lot of tricks like that now. There's like special firmware you can buy that lets you like it does the work for you. There's focus like motors you can buy. There's these like rigs you can buy. We just did it by hand. Cause,
sure. When we have like cameras and lenses that cost like tens of thousands of dollars instead of just thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Or in this case, that particular shot was shot on a $99 Nifty 50.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the focusing range on that one is...
It's touchy because it's a cheap lens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what glass? Like, how do we shoot the glass for that? Like, there's no interior windows in Jack's... You know what I mean?
His door.
There's the French door with the glass,
which I think you just keep open most of the time, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He has like an internal French door.
So you just close that door and shoot through there, and you just make it tight enough that you can't see like the frame around it. So you just see like the nameplate on the glass, and then shoot.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can tell it's a door, but it's
yeah.
It could be an office door.
We'll have to rewatch the video.
Well, but that one also, you know, there's animation, like character animation, because so we personified this tablet, and the tablet had like a face, and the tablet had lines. And you, like, how did you animate the tablet's face to go along with your?
Yeah, I had to purchase special software, and I wish I could remember what it was called right now. But basically, you record your talking, you bring it into the software, you build the face in the software, and then the mouths, they can sort of sync up to an audio file that you give it, but it's usually not great because it only almost knows when to open and close. It doesn't really understand like your lips quite as well. So you can like fine tune it to match how your mouth looks. And there's probably better software out there for that, can do like motion capture on your lips or something like that.
Well, but nowadays, and then we had this all scripted ahead of, because people for this entire movie, real life humans are interacting with an animated tablet.
Yeah.
And so we wrote the script ahead of time. Justin recorded all the lines, recorded all the audio lines for the tablet, animated all the faces. And then we ended up with like a folder full of the tablet face saying its different lines. And then we put that into PowerPoint because you can like play videos in PowerPoint, and had a whole series, a whole PowerPoint show that was set up where like each next frame was auto playing the video of each of each.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then each slide in the show was the tablet delivering one line. And then someone was like operating the tablet off camera using a presentation remote so that the characters live would talk to the tablet. And every time you hit the next button on the presentation remote, the tablet delivers its next line. So we actually, instead of, like, we didn't add in the tablet face animation later in post-production. It was actually, like, the tablet was an actor.
I'm going to slightly correct that.
Yeah.
We did anyway.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because what happened was, to film the tablet and the face, we had covered the tablet with a neutral density filter to, like, make the screen look better. And in post, it didn't look good because the neutral density stuff reflected a lot of light. So the whole tablet, and since the whole thing was supposed to advertise tablets, the tablet looked kind of crappy. It looked like you left the screen protector on that you're supposed to peel off when you purchase it. And it, you could see like tape and stuff. So then in post, we did go back and actually replace all the faces anyway.
Man.
Yeah. Which is why if you watch it now, it actually looks flawless, which is nice because it is.
But that one, yeah, we had a lot of locations. Like, that was fun. We mm-hmm. shot in a bar. We shot in a yoga studio. We shot at the beach. We shot in Jack's apartment. We built a lot of miniatures because the tablet, one scene where the tablet, the whole premise is that it's one of these combination tablet laptop things back when they were new, like 3 years ago. And the tablet has like, because the tablet's like in therapy, and flashback. He's got memories of being made fun of because he wasn't a tablet. He wasn't a laptop, and so we have flashbacks of like high school prom, and we built an entire these are some of my favorite photographs. We built an entire gymnasium, a tiny scale gymnasium, in my living room. So my living room is about 12 foot ceilings, probably 16 feet by 25 feet. So we take all the furniture out of the living room. That's our biggest soundstage, by the way. Like, all the big stuff we do is in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
So like, so many things, like, we built like the Greek trireme ship was in my living room.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a 1960s office.
Yeah, this 1960s office, Mad Men style office, was there.
We've had 1910s office.
The 1910 office,
right?
Yeah. We built for this one. We built the entire like mini scale gymnasium. Like with little mini bleachers and the flags and like the little banners that the cheerleaders make, like
disco ball. Disco ball.
Yeah, disco ball, 90s music, like, and just built this entire. And then the tablet, like, there's like tiny little kickballs and all these tablets and all these phones in there, and they're and we have like fishing line on things to pull because the tablet gets kicked by a kickball, and we like yank the fishing line and pull the tablet so it like flies back when the kickball hits them.
You also built, in addition to the gym, you also built a mini like house because
oh, yeah.
The tablet was being born or whatever, and
yeah, because his parents were
it was like family video.
Yeah, his parents were an Apple Newton.
Apple Newton,
and like
was it a laptop?
Like a laptop from the 90s.
It was like a Dell laptop. Yeah,
yeah.
All props that we had to buy.
And for that one, we had like a tiny little lamp and like shag carpet and like 70s wallpaper. And yes, we built a little like 1970s living room, like a tiny little scale version of that.
Yeah, that video, like that's what I'm saying is we put a lot of work into some of these, and there's like a lot of technical aspects that, I mean, that video just has it all, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So that's actually my favorite, even if like no one's watched it.
I'm trying to find it. I don't know where to find it.
It's in the portfolio folder.
So
yeah, I'm trying to find it in the wild and I can't find it.
Yeah.
I think we can maybe put some of these into the show post because a lot of these videos were built with campaigns. So some of the customers want their videos in YouTube and they go into their YouTube channels. And so some of those videos are still like out there in the wild in YouTube, but a lot of them go in Brightcove, which is what TechTarget uses for video hosting, and they build them into like customized sites just for campaigns and that kind of stuff. And I think in a lot of those, once that campaign is over, those videos are just sort of like gone.
They're
like
lost to the web. Yeah.
And they never really, you know, like in those days, also like a lot of times these goals weren't to go viral necessarily. They were all for like lead generation. So even at the time, they were protected like with registration protection and all this kind of stuff. So they're like sort of campaign assets for specific lead generation campaigns as opposed to like general, like viral style videos.
Yeah. I do feel like this podcast wouldn't be complete without also mentioning that we did win an award for the RIM campaign.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That. Yeah.
We should. Yeah. It was a, what do you call that actually? DigiDay, a DigiDay video award. We won best business to business.
Was and you went to like some award ceremony somewhere for
yeah,
that.
Yeah. It was in Manhattan. It was like a few blocks out of Times Square. It was cool.
And was that like a little mini Oscars? Like, did you go on
stage? Yeah, they'd get up there and they'd like bring up the category and they'd show like the, you know, whoever the contenders were, and they'd show clips from the contender video series, and then they'd announce a winner and you'd come up and get your award.
Did you know you won before you went to that, or was it actually like?
No, you find out right then.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I mean, you know, we weren't screaming or crying or anything, but some of the other categories, some of the people got very, very excited.
Wow.
But it was nice. Yeah, they had like a cocktail thing and everybody got to like walk around with their little trophy or their glass trophy or whatever, which by the way ended up at the Newton Tech Target office. We don't have it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course they take that from us. Like, yeah. that should be in our studio.
Of course it should.
So. Our studio, by the way, let's talk about that because yeah. On the shelves in the background, we tried to do a thing. I call it like the Simpsons basement. Because the Simpsons show has been pretty good about whenever they do a scene that takes place in their basement, all the stuff in the background, like every year, there's more and more junk from like things that the Simpsons had acquired over the series.
It's references.
The series,
yeah.
Like is all in the background. So, so we have a lot of stuff in our studio, like that's just kind of in the background of the studio. So even when we do like serious, like sit down interviews, like on the shelves in the background, we have all these, you know, like cool little props and stuff from the past.
Before we moved to offices, there were a lot of thin clients in here, and almost all of them were from companies that no longer exist.
Right, like a Pano Cube, and
that's the only one that's still here, actually.
And we have, you know, because there's a, I remember, so we've got one of the original Bride Forum binary clock from 2005 Bride Forum. I've got the bezel from the Citrix Net 6 Citrix Access Gateway appliance, the one that I bought in like 2004 or something like that. There's
props from videos. There's like a, why do we have the knight, the plastic knights? What was that from?
Those came from Tim Mangan. It's like a costume, like a Roman centurion, like breastplate and gauntlets and like helmet and that kind of stuff. And I spoke at a user group meeting for Tim Mangan in Boston, I don't know, like 5 years ago. And then as like a thank you, like they made a presentation to me because, you know, they said, so here's to protect you from Microsoft. I think Microsoft was speaking after me and I was talking about what Microsoft needs to do. And maybe I think this is just like right literally at the same time when I did that article about how Microsoft is screwing the industry and why I'm quitting the MVP program because, like, you know, F them.
Which we should note, you used to have the MVP thing in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right, I used to have my MVP trophy, yep. And I, like, tried to destroy that thing in a fit of, like, F you, Microsoft. And it turns out that trophy is a high quality product.
Tempered glass doesn't break, apparently.
It's thick.
Yeah.
But we've got the Homer car is back there, which I think you know, the Homer car is a is a reference we've made a lot over the years about vendors trying to add all these features to their product, and it's become these ridiculous monstrosities. And I think that was you. I think I told you we need a Homer car.
It was great. Like I felt really fun expensing that one. It's like a, go on Amazon, buy a model kit for a Homer car.
And then did you like part of your job, like sitting in your cubicle, like assembling this model?
Yeah, I had to sit there and put it together. And then at some point, we had it was either like a light earthquake or they were doing construction next door. It fell off the wall, and it like broke all apart, and I had to put it back together again. And I think now it's missing like half its pieces. So,
Jack's playing with it. Yeah, so we'll have to we'll pull together some of these videos. You know, we did a lot of one of the things for me looking back, if I was going to like reminisce and be all like, you know, warm and fuzzy about the past,
nostalgic.
I did a lot of stuff that was crazily embarrassing that some like things I would never do in my life, but you put a camera on me and I'm like hamming it up. Like, let's go.
I'd like to reference some of those right now. Yeah. One includes being almost naked for a Symantec video and running down the street. I think you were wearing just like,
let's adjust these one by one. Right. Yeah. One of them is I was running naked down the street and I took off all my clothes and I got a pair of like shorts, like running shorts were like flesh colored.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I say, oh yeah, you put a camera on me and I'll ham it up. But in most of these cases, if possibly not all of these cases, the camera is like across the street or
far enough away I won't get arrested too.
Right. So that one, and of course we're doing multiple takes.
Yeah. It's never just
running
one.
Down the street. Yelling and screaming and pulling a like banner behind me for Symantec in what appears to be completely naked. And I run down the street in downtown San Francisco and then walk back and do it again.
But of course, and, because you're in San Francisco, nobody even notices.
Yeah. How about the bus? Like, remember when I had my bike helmet and I'm running down the street wearing a shirt and tie, wearing a bike helmet, chasing a bus, literally running down the middle of the street after this bus, and the people in the back window are just like, what the fuck is this guy?
Well, so the best part is, so we have an outtakes video. In the outtakes video, and I'd forgotten about this, we had to shoot that scene twice because the first time was by your house, sort of, and we tried to have you chase a bus there, but the problem is the buses would keep stopping in the middle of the intersection, so you'd run after it and then you'd catch up with it. So we had to change locations and go do it somewhere else. So you had to do it again.
So I was actually running after a bus in the middle of the block.
Yeah.
You're bitching about this guy that yells at 3 o'clock in the morning every morning. And really,
he's that guy.
You were just one of the crazy guys that day. Yeah, I did like the guy that chased after buses.
Yeah.
We also did, how about where I was wearing full drag?
That's what, when you said the bus, that's the one I was thinking of. When we had to sit all
But again,
the
no
back
one would notice. Like, no one bats an eye.
Like, I was wearing a full like ball gown, blush. Like Mariah was the makeup, like applied lipstick, blush, eyeliner, long dangly earrings. I was wearing a full bright red ball gown. Even buying the dress,
mm-hmm.
Went to the store to buy the dress, and I'm trying these dresses on. And it's, yeah,
we had you.
I will never forget when you're like, "All right, this is weird, but can you zip me?"
Never again, hopefully, right?
You know, like in San Francisco, nobody thinks different. You try that shit in Omaha.
No.
even the video with me with the megaphone.
Yeah.
I got the bullhorn, and it was a video for BlackBerry where it's saying, like, if you don't have MDM, you may as well broadcast all your private information. So in that one, I was not playing Brian the IT guy. I was playing, like,
guy broadcasting his information.
Yeah. So, like, I was full on suit and tie with a BlackBerry and a megaphone. Running down the street saying, my password is, you know, bananas17. Oh, my gosh. You didn't know. And, like, God, people were not appreciative.
No. This was, like, a summer day, middle of the day, right by Moscone Center. There were lots of people.
And I was, like, yelling in the BlackBerry or yelling in the megaphone. there's a sandwich board one also where we made, like, a sandwich board sign and I'm passing out leaflets.
Oh,
about,
my God. And we had real people come up, remember?
Yeah, because that was one for Symantec. And I was passing out leaflets about Symantec app application virtualization. And the whole semantic video was kind of funny because the premise of the video was it was a video within a video of us trying to think of what could we do for semantic because they do so many different things.
To embarrass you.
And we were having all these bad ideas. But the video is funny because we did the flashbacks or the like cuts to all the bad ideas actually happening in real life. And so every bad idea we had to then go out and shoot.
What happened to us when we did the one where we threw their laptops out the window? Gave everybody iPads and everybody just threw their laptops out the window. Everybody threw theirs in the garbage can. I threw my laptop out the window because the garbage can was full. And then so later on we went downstairs and then bashed a laptop against the sidewalk. And as we were trying to film this, some guy came up to us and started talking to us.
It was,
you remember?
Yeah, it was.
He was trying to get a free laptop.
It was a homeless guy who was standing at the intersection down the street, and he would like wait for cars to stop, and then you approach their windows. So he saw us, I guess, because we were there for a while, maybe. And yeah, he came up and was talking to us about it, and like, the funny part is he didn't ask for money. He was like,
he wasn't asking
for
anything. He just wanted to, like, somebody to talk to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's the guy, when we were doing the semantic one, we were passing out leaflets for semantic enterprise application virtualization, and some guy was very pissed at us.
That was another, I don't want to call him homeless necessarily.
He was mad at semantic.
Yeah. He was a guy, he was one of those guys who like looks like he just backpacks everywhere, you know? And he was laying next to the BART station. And so you were doing your thing, and he started complaining about how semantic had screwed him over. And he was like, but what did he say? Everything he said was like almost correct, but then totally technically wrong.
Well, like about how their software, their antivirus software doesn't work, and it slows my computer down, and their antivirus, like McAfee's better.
Yeah. It was like the only sort of like homeless person rambling you would get in Tech City, San Francisco.
So Steve Greenberg, this is a little bit related. Steve Greenberg in Phoenix, Arizona, runs the Citrix user group. Mm. He said at their first meeting, a homeless guy came in and he knew just enough to sound like he knew what the hell he was talking about, but he just faked it long enough to get free food and then left.
Good for him.
So, but good like, to, so there's some sort of skill there. Like, you got to have some sort of background.
But so he kept yelling at Brian. Like, it was the funniest thing. Like, we're trying to film this, and he just keeps going, oh, you suck. I hate them. You know, like, Brian's just, like, doing his thing because, well, we're already there in a sandwich board.
Here's $20 and a beer. Please, just
shh. Go away. Yeah.
But
guys came up and took flyers from him, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of people running around that have, flyers for.
How many times did Jack have to wear a full bodysuit?
Twice?
Oh, okay. I thought it was more than that.
Or is it just once?
Or was it just that unpleasant that you just dread wearing?
You played an app once.
Yeah, yeah. I was a flashlight malware app.
I thought you had to wear it one other time.
I thought so, too.
I don't know.
We also rented out the porn studio.
Oh, yeah.
I hope we've not gotten to this
kink,
yet.
Kink. We rented Kink.
So in San Francisco, there's a company called kink.com, which does like S&M-style porn. And they have...
an amazing building.
There's a building it's a huge studio, and the studio is actually like it's all owned by the same kind of umbrella, but the studio is set up as a nonprofit called the Armory Studios. And the thing is, because S&M porn is so specialized, they have sets already set up for everywhere that porn would take place. So like dungeon, you know, butcher's lair, but all like Victorian, you know, house, office, bar, restaurant, copy machine repair. Like, they have all these studios, but they're actually like full on legit studios with like all the lighting in the ceiling and like the sound, proper acoustics. And it's funny because it's used for porn. Like, all the floors are actually soft. So even like the hard dungeon floor or the hard wood floors are really like kind of like rubberized padded. So if a particular actor or actress has to be on his or her knees for a long time, they don't get tired. So we did that video for VMware. It was like awkward moments in IT, and we needed to set to a set that was like the Victorian, what was it?
Like Masterpiece Theater.
Yeah. Sitting by the fireplace.
But that was so, and you can rent out the studios, and so like I said, there was no actual, like in our studio, we were just filming me in a smoking jacket, you know, hosting the show. But of course, you know, you go to like the dressing room and stuff, and there's like all the actors from all the studios are like kind of walking around. So it's almost like, you know, you go like, you know, the shot ends, you go out of your studio into like the hall, and there's just, you know, all the actors and all the crew from all of the shots that were happening in that building on that day.
Didn't they have to take down like giant watercolors or, you know, paintings of naked people behind you?
Yeah. Like, there were some interesting paintings on the walls that had to be removed.
I just picture the discussion like, hey, can you guys remove those? And they're like, and that like Teamsters or whatever are like, wait, really? We're like, yeah, we're not shooting porn here. And they're like, are you sure? You sure you're not shooting any porn?
But see, that's actually the really cool thing about that place is no one questioned anything.
Right.
Like they
didn't.
Well,
I mean, look at what it's for. Like, you know, who's judging?
But they put out, when we go in our studio, they close us in there and they put like the sign with this red light on the outside that says like no entry, studio in use. And it's basically like, okay, guys, come on out if you need us for anything. But otherwise, you know, go nuts. Room is soundproof.
I mean, that place was great. You know, it'd be really easy to judge or whatever. It was a fantastic experience working there.
Oh, yeah. And they were so, I mean, it's so professional in terms of everything that they offer in terms of support. And it was really great. And I mean, and I would imagine us using them again in the future just because, you know, like I said, the studios itself is set up as a separate nonprofit. You just rent the studios and do whatever you need.
They had good offerings. Like, why not?
Yeah. And there's a lot of things too, because like, I mean, you know, if you need a bar, but you need to be able to control the entire environment, including all the patrons and all the lighting and all everything, it's hard to set that up in a real bar. But they have, it's all ready to go.
Yeah. Working there. Actually, that was, we went there exactly 1 year ago yesterday.
Wow. It's so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think, I'm looking through our videos. I don't know if you have any other, like, favorites or interesting things that you remember doing over the years.
I mean, you know, nothing particularly sticks out. Every video we make had some challenge. You know, we every little thing we would do would be a little bit different, to our credit, I think. And they'd all require something a little different. So, you know, I think we, you know, oh, I misspelled. Oh, Dan, Jesus, what am I doing? I can't talk and type at the same time. Oh, well.
Oh yeah, see, now we have the chat window going on.
Yeah.
So, you know,
wow.
In the podcast.
Yeah, I can't do it. You see, you're better at this than I am. I'm always on the other side.
Well, so we talked about...
I was thinking of, you know, besides these funny videos, like between Bryform and Synergies and Mobile World Congress and VMworld, we've all done a lot of traveling together. All over the world, pulling some, you know, crazy long days of just getting so many videos and then getting them edited late at night. And
yeah, well, I mean, I can say too, like,
thanks, buddy.
Yeah, well, me and Jack, like, we've gone to Barcelona several times now and done stuff there and on weird deadlines with terrible internet connections. So. It's been fun. Yeah. I loved working here with you guys, and it's just I've done a lot of things I wouldn't have done otherwise, which I think is the coolest part about it.
Yeah, your job it reminds me a lot of like being a firefighter because in between projects, you know, is downtime. So that's when you're able to learn cinema 4D.
Right.
And it's kind of funny because someone might come over your shoulder. You spend a solid week learning how to like 3D move a fake camera on a real scene, and people are like, what'd you do this week and why'd you do that? It's like firemen like cleaning the fire trucks, and then 18 months later we need to replace a beer can in a video that's shot on a drone. And then the weeks when we actually are making the videos, it's like right, tell your fiance that you'll see her next week.
Yeah, it's an all hands on deck kind of thing, which is pretty fun.
So your new job we talked about on the last podcast, but let's talk about that now real quick just so we have like this all in one place. Because I'm going to listen to all these when I'm like 90 in the nursing home. So
my new job is at Tesla. Pretty much every person now has asked me if they can get a discount on a car. The answer is no. I don't get one either.
Like that's the only thing holding me back from a Tesla Roadster or whatever. Like, oh yeah, can you get that $200,000 car down to like 180? Then I'm totally buying it.
Well, you know, they're always supposedly working on something cheaper. I hope that's true, because I'd love to buy one too. I have no desire to use gas. So, but I'll be going there and working in what they're calling their body repair program. And basically, they need people to document every procedure conceivable when it comes to maintenance on one of these cars. And they want to do like a lot of bigger stuff. They don't want to just make a manual. They want to do better than, you know, General Motors or Ford or whatever. So, and I like that about the company in general, is their feelings on that sort of stuff. So they're bringing me in and a couple other very talented people, and we're going to basically just start tearing cars apart, I think, and trying to show how to fix them.
And so it's a lot of video, like video demonstrations and animations and yeah, how to guides and all this kind of stuff.
Video, animation, photo, pretty much everything you can think of. They want it to be a very multimedia interactive experience. And they have some pretty cool ways that I'm not allowed to reveal, but they have some pretty cool ways that they want to make that happen. And it should be pretty interesting. I think it'll raise the bar. So I'm very excited about it. It makes my commute worse.
Yeah, so where are you? In Fremont?
So I'll be in Fremont, which is funny because so I live in the East Bay, and Fremont's in the East Bay, but it's like at the bottom of the bay, and I live at the top of the bay. So it's actually a lot further. Bart sort of goes there, but takes a really long time to do so. So I'll probably start driving to work, which makes me think I need to get satellite radio or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever you need to like be able to stream these podcasts.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Mariah just laughed, I think, because that means she's going to be doing more of these.
Well, and also Mariah. So Mariah, people hear us talk about her. Like she runs our team. In the meantime, you know, like I know Justin and Mariah have been working this week to like show at least how to do the basics. Like we'll hire a freelancer or something like that if we need to shoot like an actual like, you know, sort of these funny videos, but for like running the podcast and that kind of stuff, you know, we've been, Justin's been showing Mariah, and I kind of think of like, okay, so Mariah, everything Justin mentioned today, just add all that to your like, you know,
yeah,
to-do list.
Just do it. It's fine.
But
yeah, no problem.
You can't do any less of your current job, and there's no raise involved.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, why sleep? Sleeping seems silly.
Sleep just wastes time.
Yeah. I'll sleep when I'm old.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to say that Mariah has been a real champ this week, because I've conveyed a lot of information to her, including running this podcast, which she's doing.
Thank you.
And she's absorbed all of it incredibly well. I don't know how much of it will stick, but...
I took notes.
Yeah, I know. So hopefully.
Yeah, so, it'll be fine.
So let's put some of his notes into practice. I think we're done here. We talked a long time, but... I think this podcast was as much for me to listen to in 5 years as it was for anyone else. Good luck, Justin.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, you know, in the first case, because I obviously my resume looks a lot better now than it did 5 years ago.
Yeah. So does our product, though. So, you know, it all worked out. Right. This is, you upped our game, and we're going to have a hard time, I think, keeping it up there. But, yeah, we're happy for you. It sounds like a really cool opportunity.
Thank you. And thanks to all you guys. Jack, you've been awesome. Mariah, obviously. Gabe, Brian, and just everyone else who worked with us. It's been real.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We will keep in touch. We will be hitting up for the factory tour at Tesla as soon as you're able to do that.
Yep. And we, you know, we still do barbecues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, from San Francisco... Final day the band is together. Thank you, everyone.